Hey everyone, welcome back to another episode of the Millionaire Real Estate Agent Podcast. I'm Jason Abrams, and this is the place where we lift the curtain on the world of real estate like never before. Every week, I sit down with visionaries, pirates, and mavericks. We're here to document, demonstrate, and most importantly, demystify their game-changing models and systems. What secrets propel them to the top? And how are they living their dreams? This is about passion, it's about strategy, but above all, it's about real, tangible success. So buckle up and let's dive in. This is the Millionaire Real Estate Agent Podcast. You know, gang, there's so many ways to find clients that you can help when it comes to residential real estate. And one of the ways, and I see it every year, is agents that specialize in niche markets. The reason this is so powerful is because you have agents that are solving specific problems, not general problems, but specific problems, usually attributed to either a life event or a certain group of individuals. In this case, and in this vein, Bridget is who you want to talk to. We're going to be joined today by a real estate agent who specializes. And by the way, when I say specializes, she's created a niche in the divorce space that's now going completely national. And she represents people all over the great state of California. And she looks for the people that need the most help. And in her words, those are people who are going through divorce. Now, this is a serious topic. And we're not going to make light of divorce at all, but I do want you to consider this. When people get divorced, they have to solve housing needs. So the marital home has to be dealt with, then each soon-to-be ex needs to either buy or rent. So the math of this thing is that it causes a ton of real estate transactions. How do you handle these people and make sure that they're honored through what they're going through? How do you help the people that are helping them, the divorce attorneys? How do you build the pipelines? How do you service the pipelines? And how do you turn this into a thriving empire? That's what you're going to learn today. Bridget, how are you?
I'm doing great, Jason. Thank you.
What an honor to have you. I am wildly excited about, I'm not going to bore you, but I remember the first time that I heard about what you're doing and my head exploded all over my mahogany desk. And I feel the same way right now. I can't wait to get into it. Before we do, let's go back in time. I want to hear the story. Tell me how you ended up in the greatest industry in the world.
I was 23 years old, and I had just gotten laid off from a marketing job. And one of our clients, if you remember Help Yourself, the owner of that business that was starting that particular location, he had said, hey, you've got some good business sense. Why don't you come and help me start this real estate company? And I thought, gosh, I don't even know what real estate, I don't understand what escrow means. I know nothing. And he said, that's okay. I'll teach you real estate, but you've got a good business sense. I want you to start up this business with me. And so I did. And I got really good background and education about starting up a small business. And a few years later, I went to another company and actually helped them with recruiting from 5 to about 50 agents. I don't think that company exists anymore either. And then I started my own brokerage when I was 27 years old. And I actually came to KW a few years later, kicking and screaming. See, I actually knew that I had heard that, you know, if you go to KW, you drink the Kool-Aid. But I did know that they had the best education. And if you remember what real estate was like in 2009, short sales were everywhere. And here in San Diego, I felt like I need more education. At that point, I had my own brokerage. I had 7 agents underneath me, and I didn't really understand short sales. So my plan was, I'm going to go to KW for just 2 years. That's it. I'm just going to learn everything I can from KW, and then I'm going to come back to my own brokerage. And unfortunately, I'm a really slow learner because 14 years later, I'm still here.
It's so crazy. So, okay, I want to unpack a few of those parts of the story. When you made the transition from kind of corporate America marketing job into the small entrepreneurial brokerage world, what were some of your aha's?
Well, I needed to have part-time jobs because it's at, you know, at 23, it's not like I had a database. My family wasn't even from San Diego. So everybody I knew was just as poor as me, certainly couldn't afford to buy anything and definitely didn't have a house to sell. And it was a real struggle. I didn't really understand just how competitive the real estate industry really is if you don't have a good database.
And do you have immediate success when you start? I mean, one of the challenges with this show is we're interviewing primarily mega agents. I mean, this is the Millionaire Real Estate Agent podcast, which, by the way, if you're new to the show, welcome. Our podcast carries the namesake of the Millionaire Real Estate Agent book, which, of course, was written by Gary Keller, Jay Papasan, and Dave Jenks. May he rest in peace. And it's a collection of models to help people run profitable real estate businesses. But it's easy to infer that everyone we talked to was a wild success from day one, and they still are today. Is that your story, Bridget?
Absolutely not. I was very slow to success. I would say, you know, somewhere between a turtle and a sloth, maybe. So, you know, when I was 23, I lived very frugally. I had, you know, I was single, didn't have kids, nothing. And so I learned how to live on very little, and I kept a lot of the money in my business. And here in San Diego County, the average agent sells like 1.5 deals a year. And just because we have so many agents and so few of transactions. And so for me, it really was, okay, if I could just get to 5 deals, that was my starting goal. If I could just get to 5 deals. And my first year on my own, I did 2 deals. You know, San Diego prices weren't quite as high as they are now back then. So I think I made $13,000 that year. And I'm pretty sure my expenses were about $15,000. So that's why I had to have part-time jobs. It was very difficult. And so I certainly appreciate new agents, how hard it is, especially if you don't have a good database of people. And so for me, just kind of building up slowly, okay, if I could just get to 5 deals. And then when I got to 5 deals, if I could just get to 10 deals, I will be, you know, so rich, right? And then if I can just get to 15, and then you kind of go slowly. But I was definitely not one of those people out the gate who, you know, did 100 deals, like some of our agents. And ultimately, I think it also depends on the type of business that you're building. For me, it was very much a relational business that I've built in different ways. But ultimately, I think there's different ways you can do it, right? You can cold call and you can go get a listing today. You could build relationships that might take longer. It could take months. Maybe for some, it could take years.
So when does it all click for you?
So about 14 years ago, one of my past clients, she was maybe one of the worst clients I've ever had. And I can say this now because we're friends, but she was buying her first property. She was an attorney and very type A, very successful woman. Half the time when I would go to show her property, she wouldn't show up and her best friend would show up. Looking back now, I probably would fire somebody like that. But back then, my business wasn't quite doing as well. So even the home that she ended up buying, she didn't show up to see. Her friend did it and she wrote the offer. And turns out she liked it and she still lives there today. But after that deal closed, I thought, I'm probably never going to hear from her again because I don't even think she liked me. And 2 months later, I get a call. Hi, my name is Jen, and I got referred to you by such and such firm, and I heard you can help me sell my house. I'm going through a divorce. And I thought, okay, sure, but I have no idea who that person is. It happens again a couple weeks later, and I thought, okay, this is not a fluke. So I finally look up this number of this firm. It's no longer there. I think it was called the Divorce Help Clinic or something like that of San Diego. And I call the number and the business owner answers. And she says, oh, yes, your client, Larissa, she referred you to us. She says you were the most amazing agent and that you would be phenomenal at working with our clients who are going through a divorce. And that is sort of how it happened. I accidentally fell into it about 14 years ago.
That is the craziest thing. This is like an Agatha Christie novel. You're getting these phone calls. You have no idea who to attribute them to. And it's the client that never hung out with you, that you didn't even think liked you.
Yes. Yeah.
So this opens your eyes, this moment. And you now, let me just bring the audience along on this journey with us. You now run a business that's based on helping people that are going through divorce, list, and buy real estate. And it is becoming a global sensation. I mean, it's across the entire state of California. We just heard the origin story. Take us through step by step and walk us through how this works and what happened.
Sure. So after that, I called the owner, spoke to her and said, I'd love to bring you all lunch and talk about how I can help your clients. And I did. And there was, I think, four of them that worked there at the time. So I brought them lunch and we just kind of chatted. And they really liked me and they wanted to support my business. And I was happy to help them. At the time, they were doing mediations, which are typically lower conflict, but not always. So that just means that, you know, we're not dealing with court orders. There's no litigation going on. And I thought, okay, I'll do these, but I don't want to be a divorce specialist. I don't want to get that name attached to me. I'm finally starting to build a decent traditional business. I'm getting invited to weddings and baby showers. I don't want to be invited to their divorce party. And so I said, okay, I'm going to work with you guys, but I really don't want to do this. And so after years, I went out and I got a designation. It wasn't the most helpful, but it gave me some letters behind my name. A lot of designations, I think it can, you know, depending on them. And so I ultimately decided, you know what, I'll work for these people, but I don't want to tell my past clients because I don't want them to not refer me traditional business. I don't want to become the divorce realtor of San Diego.
You are afraid of getting typecast. You don't want to only play the role of the realtor for divorce. You want it to be the realtor for everybody. And you are afraid of the stigma of the ambulance chasing realtor.
Absolutely. That was part of it. And I think for me, ethics are so important, Jason. And it really upsets me when people question mine. Fortunately, it doesn't happen very often. But I was afraid of that happening. And, you know, as we sort of talked about before, I look back now and I think that was just the story I told myself in my head. And I missed out on a lot of opportunities during that time to help other people who really needed it.
100%. I this whole idea that if you look for people that need to sell real estate, you're like a quote unquote ambulance chaser. I think it's absurd. If I was a surgeon, I'd be chasing every ambulance in town. If I really thought these hands could help people, and your whole mission in life is to help people. So you go looking for them when they need your help the most.
Well, and I think that's it. You know, you go to conferences and you hear people speak on panels about how to do amazing things with open houses or first time buyers or luxury buyers or sellers. And I think sometimes the people who need us the most are the ones we're not usually talking about.
So good. Okay, so how do you build the business? Like, I want you to pretend that I'm the real estate agent. I'm driving in my car right now. By the way, if you're driving, don't take notes. I'm taking the notes. We send them out to y'all so you can all just get my copies. How do you go build this business?
So the first step and the most important step is if you are going to go out and build a business surrounding attorneys, you need to be educated. And when I say educated, I don't just mean you need to be a real estate expert in your town or your city or county. If you're going to be working in the space, it should be assumed that you're already a local expert. You need to be an expert in family law. And what I mean by that is there will come a time if you work hard in this space where instead of being seen as a realtor or a real estate professional, the family law community will view you as a family law professional. That's what you want to get in. You want to get in with them so deep that they call you up when they have questions, even if there's not a property to sell. If they need documents, you're the person that's the go-to. I tell them, I don't care where the property is, call me. I just had an attorney ask me if I could sell a property in Bend, Oregon. It's a little far for me. So I don't know, what is that, 15 hours away? So I politely declined, but I was able to refer him to a certified divorce real estate expert in Bend, Oregon.
Okay, so how do I get educated in family law? Do I just go to ChatGPT and type in help on my divorce? Like, what do I do?
Lord, no. So there's a few things you can do. Number one, you can educate yourself. Read as much as you can about working in this space from anywhere you can. Of course, I have my Demystified class that I teach to agents all over the country. I'm happy to come teach in your market center or in your office. But if this is a space you want to work in, there are a couple designations out there that you can get. One in particular was actually created after the CFLS program, which is I would compare it of a realtor versus a broker, but in the family law community. A CFLS is a certified family law specialist, and they are attorneys who work in family law who have gone through a rigorous additional program in order to reach this designation. And so as a certified divorce real estate expert, I went through a similar program that was actually created by a family law attorney, a judge, actually three family law attorneys, a judge, and a real estate agent who worked in this space. And she saved me a lot of time. I only did that about 4 years ago. If I had taken it 14 years ago, it didn't exist. But if I had, I would probably be doing a majority of that and probably less traditional business.
I'm jumping in because this is so important. Did you hear what she said? She said the first step to being able to represent people that are going through divorce at the highest level was to go get educated. And I believe that's one of the connective pieces of tissue across almost everybody that we've had on this show. Everyone that we've met with is wildly educationally based. Gary Keller is fond of saying that the path of any business mirrors the personal growth of that business's owner, founder, CEO. Friends, what are you doing from an educational standpoint to grow as a person and grow your expertise? That's a question worth answering. So that's certified divorce real estate expert.
Yes.
That they Google that and it'll come up.
Absolutely. But I was completely blown out of the water of what it was because they taught business development. That's the question, Jason, I get all the time. How do I actually talk to the attorneys? How do I get in with the attorneys? And the reality is there's no easy button. It takes time. It takes time to build relationships with attorneys, and you can't market them the same way you would market your database, your past clients that love you, that love your cute cookie recipes that you send them monthly. Attorneys, not so much.
Okay, so step one is get educated.
Yes.
And I'm doing that by educating myself, and I'm doing that by maybe getting a designation. What's step two?
Step two is come up with a plan on how you are going to build a relationship with these attorneys. There's lots of different ways that you can do it. And it just depends on your skill level, your comfort level, and your financial ability. So for me, I chose, once again, education, but the opposite of education. Once I educated myself, I decided I wanted to educate the entire family law community whenever I could. So anytime I get an opportunity to speak, I take it. If it's something small, I take it. If it's a big event with a lot of attorneys, I take it. I partner sometimes when I teach at our bar association. I partner with one of the more well-known family law attorneys because I know that if they co-teach a class with me, a lot more attorneys will show up. And so just learning the tricks of the trade and making a lot of mistakes along the way.
Now, what Bridget didn't tell you, and I find fascinating, is that she saw a need in the lawyer's space within the divorce industry. You see, lawyers in the family law world, they're required to take continuing education just like real estate agents. And if you're out there and you're not a licensed agent, let me just tell you, after you get your license, every year, a couple years, depending on your state, you go for continuing education. They give you all the updates to the laws and we all continue to move forward and grow. What Bridget did was genius. She wrote a course specific for family law practitioners on how real estate works during divorce. Then she took that course to the State of California and the Bar Association and got it approved for CE credits for lawyers. Then she started doing lunch and learns in all of these law firms that specialize in divorce. And the bonus for the lawyers, they got credit towards their continuing education. They got a fantastic lunch. And for Bridget, she got FaceTime with the people that she needed to network with, the lawyers representing her future clients in their divorces. Bridget used education as lead generation, and I think that's genius. I love that. So step one is get educated. Step two is plan how I'm going to build relationships. You chose education, which I think makes all the sense in the world. Then what do?
Well, once they start to see you as something a little different than a traditional realtor, then they'll start to confide in you and ask you questions for help on their cases. And you want to be the go-to person that, even if you don't know the answer, go out and figure it out. Go find the answer. Become the resource for anything real estate related. You want them to feel like they can call you about anything. And then the other thing, of course, is that I think is critical to success. I guess you could say this is step three, is you need to get in front of the attorneys, past the education. You need to be able to have one-on-one conversations. So how are you going to do that? Jason, if you go to an event and you meet, let's say you're in a networking group and there's a couple of divorce attorneys there. If you say, hi, I'm Jason, I'm a realtor with Keller Williams, and I'd like to help you, you know, with all your clients selling their divorce listings, how likely are you going to get, you know, get some? Probably not very. So for me, it was also a shift of how do I introduce myself? And so when I go to an event where there's attorneys and maybe one attorney introduces me to one I've never met, or maybe somebody who I don't think has heard of me, I say, hi, I'm Bridget Potterton. I'm a certified divorce real estate expert, and I work with family law attorneys when there's real property that needs to be sold. And then for me, it's just that simple. I've cut it down a lot because I'm a talker, as you can tell. And so essentially, once I start chatting with them, they start asking, oh, okay, so do you do appraisals? You sell listings? Tell me about what you do. And I say, well, I'm a trained third-party neutral, which that is not something they're used to hearing from realtors. Because we're not trained as realtors on how to be a third-party neutral. For a lot of realtors, I think they make the common mistake of communicating with the parties together. And that can be explosive. So learning how to handle neutrality in these types of cases is critical. And attorneys find that to be invaluable, especially on the more high-conflict cases.
It's so fascinating to me that she just described, I simply learned the words that this group of humans, these lawyers, use, and that's what makes me acceptable to that group. Friends, in every single subset of human, there are words that are being used. We are connected by language. Please, please, please don't gloss over the point she just made. Gary Keller once told me that if you're a speaker, the words are your paint. The conversation is your canvas. And every great artist knows exactly what they're painting. Those are words I've never forgotten. Make sure you know the words that connect you to the people that you're trying to be influential with. That's the lesson. After you've made these introductions, now it's just a question of being there to answer the questions and then giving amazing service, I'm guessing.
Absolutely. And one thing that I will share for anybody listening who maybe has had a very difficult divorce listing where they think, oh, I'm never going to get business from that attorney again because that deal just went south so much. One of the more difficult transactions I had that was a family law case a couple years ago, it was the first case that I'd worked on with this particular attorney. And it went so horribly that I thought this guy is probably saying the worst things to his attorney about me. And about 3 months later, she sends me an email. Hi, Bridget, can I set up a Zoom meeting with you? And I thought, uh-oh, I'm in big trouble. And I said, sure, okay. So we scheduled a Zoom meeting. And when I turn on my Zoom and she's there, her husband is there as well. And they want me to help them buy their first place together. And that was a huge aha for me, because attorneys understand that their clients are going through such a difficult time, that their behavior is erratic, that they may not be in the best position to say whether or not you're a terrible realtor or not. And it's also a good opportunity. I've helped several family law attorneys buy and sell property. So there's certainly that as well.
You know, you look up. Gary always says the path is in the math, and the math is always the path. Bridget, you're going to have just over 1 million divorces this year in the United States, on the low side. Mm-hmm. That's based on 45 of the states reporting, by the way, in the statistic that I'm quoting here. Mm-hmm. They all, for the most part, need to buy or rent. And they probably have a marital home that needs to sell. So it's very likely that you're talking about 2 to 3 million transactions annually from that group. When you look up at 5 to 6 million total transactions a year, give or take, I mean, we're at 4 right now. It's one heck of a segment, Bridget.
It really is, and it's one that we as an industry have not given enough time or education towards. You know, I think we as realtors, we always joke that we have to be psychologists for our buyers and our sellers, and certainly divorce is no exception to that. But ultimately, how are we as an industry educated on how to work these spaces? How do we handle if there's only one party on title? You know, I mean, there, if you look at real estate law and family law, what I always say is when they intersect, they do not always play well in the sandbox, because you have the family law attorneys that are thinking, yes, sell the property. Wait a minute. Why aren't you talking to my client? Well, your client's not on title. And, you know, how do we work to solve that problem? Because that is horrific that there are people out there selling their home that don't even know what's going on, because they happen to not be on the title. And sometimes they're the one living in the spouse in the home, which means they're treated like a tenant by their realtor. You can imagine how awful that would be. And there are ways that you can work with the family law community in order to resolve that problem. There's a lot of issues that come up with the sale of the home in these family law cases. And if you are going to be an expert to these attorneys, you need to figure out how to solve those problems so that they know that their clients will be in good hands regardless of who's on title and how things are being handled.
The system couldn't be more simple. And it's genius, by the way, in its simplicity, which is I'm going to get educated, I'm going to make relationships, I'm going to provide amazing service, and in between there, I'm going to have to get in front of them so they like me. Now that you've done a ridiculous number of divorce real estate deals, what are the top 2 or 3 rules for not working with the attorneys, but working with the people that are getting divorced? What's your mantra in your head as you do this?
That's a good, great question, actually, Jason. This is one that I shout from the rooftops when I teach my class, and I can't say this enough. So please remember this if you remember nothing else from today. The first step is that if you are going to take a divorce listing, under no circumstances should you ever disclose it to buyers or agents. There are a number of reasons why, but to me, we talk a lot about fair housing violations, especially here in California where everyone sues everybody. And one of the challenges is when you look at the fair housing, there's religion, there's, you know, different groups that are protected classes. And one group that everybody seems to forget is that familial status is a protected class. And we always talk about buyers with fair housing, but why shouldn't sellers be afforded that same protection? And so there's no reason that it should be disclosed, because I think that as an industry, we think divorce equals distress, and that's not the case. Because if it was, every single divorce out there would end in the sale of the property. And we know that doesn't happen. Sometimes parties buy each other out or they just keep it. So divorce does not equal distress.
Now, you've taken this show on the road, so to speak. Why are you doing that?
Well, Jason, basically because you made me. In reality, I didn't understand until about a year ago at family reunion when I spoke on my first panel there, that there was a major need for education in this space. I don't think it was until then that I realized that what I was doing was that unique. And I guess I just got in my zone and I just forgot. And so ultimately after that, I thought, you know what, I should start teaching a class on this. And I'm going to teach all over to market centers, to regions. And they have been extremely kind to me and all the team leaders. I'm so grateful for those opportunities. But I think the most important thing is just as an industry, we need to elevate our professionalism, especially when dealing with highly complex transactions.
There it is. Friends, you just heard it. She is doing an amazing service for all of us. And I couldn't agree with you more. When you find people that need to be helped, help them. And you can't help everyone, but you can always help someone. And Bridget has made a business out of finding the people that need the most help and being willing to do whatever it takes. I love it. Bridget, we want to invite you to the lightning round. We are going to ask you a series of questions. We want the first thing that comes to your mind. Will you play?
Sure.
Bridget, what is your favorite color?
Purple.
What is your favorite food?
Chocolate.
Stop the lightning round. It's so good. Isn't it so? What, do you have a favorite chocolate?
Lava cake is my favorite dessert.
And it melts and it oozes out and then it's hot in the middle. Is this, you some friends, those of you that haven't ordered a chocolate souffle, you have to order that before you order the entree or you're going to be dragged out through a waiting period while they make it. Trust me on this. I know. Bridget, back into the lightning round. What is your favorite movie?
Ooh, that's tough. I would say the Maverick movie was the last one I'd seen in a movie in a long time. That was a great one.
The first one or the second one?
The second one.
Okay. That's okay. There's plenty of baby boomers now that want to debate with you which of these were better, but I'll take it. I thought it was good too. Do you have a favorite? It doesn't have to be a favorite, but is there a book that you've read that you think all of us should read?
Oh, there's so many. I would say one that I read recently that is not a well-known book is called De-Escalate. And it's written by a guy named Doug, I think Richard Doug. I think the last name is Doug. I'm blanking on the author. But essentially, it's all about how to de-escalate high conflict, which as you can imagine, I do deal with frequently. But I can also say that you can test it out on your children and it can work with them too. So it's not just for high complex transactions.
By the way, I don't say this often. I'm ordering that one right now. Bridget, do you have a favorite sound? Is there a noise that you love?
The ocean.
There it is. Friends, you heard it here. Bridget, thank you for everything you're doing on behalf of every customer you've helped, and more importantly, everyone you will help. Thank you, thank you, thank you.
Thank you so much, Jason, for doing this and for elevating the level of education in our industry. Without you, I don't know what we would do.
It's in the books. There you go, friends. Another episode of the Millionaire Real Estate Agent Podcast. This show continues to roll. I want you to think about what you just learned and the simplicity of it. Bridget looked up. She saw a niche market for people that needed her services. She then went and got educated so she could provide the best service. She then found a way to get in front of these attorneys and the face time that it takes to make it happen. And most importantly, she then delivered amazing service. Time and time again in her story, someone came back after the fact to tell her that she had made a difference in their lives, and that's why they were sending her the next client. If you look up and you're not getting the amount of repeat and referral business you want, friends, think about the value you're providing and how that value is being received by the end user. There are lots of people out there that need our help. Bridget found one group of them. Go forth and do likewise. There it is. That wraps another episode. Friends, I don't know what you're taking out of this. I really don't. I'll tell you what I want you to be taking out of it, which is these are the people that are having tremendously big lives. And the reason it's happening is because they're setting up the models and systems to do just that. Gary Keller told me that leadership is teaching people how to think so that they do the things they need to do when they need to do them, so that ultimately they get the things they want when they want to have them. And that's what I want for you. You're all leaders, but it begins with leading ourselves. If you're enjoying this podcast, I want you to click the subscribe button anywhere that you get your podcasts. We want to be the voice in your head every single week. And every week we're dropping new content. We also send out a newsletter at the conclusion of every show to make sure that you get the highest points and the models and systems that were discussed. So if you want to sign up, I need your name and your email address. Head over to themillionaireagentpodcast.com. Millionaireagentpodcast.com. Enter your name and your email address, and every week that newsletter will be in your box. Friends, you just went on a journey. I hope that what happens between now and the next time we meet is absolutely wonderful for you. Thanks for listening. I'll see you next week.
This podcast is for general informational purposes only. The views, thoughts, and opinions of the guest represent those of the guest and not KWRI and its affiliates, and should not be construed as financial, economic, legal, tax, or other advice. This podcast is provided without any warranty or guarantee of its accuracy, completeness, timeliness, or results from using the information. Warning. You must comply with the TCPA and any other federal, state, or local laws, including for B2B calls and texts. Never call or text a number on any do not call list, and do not use an auto dialer or artificial voice or pre-recorded messages without proper consent. Contact your attorney to ensure your compliance.